this July 4th weekend, stock up on your favorite supplements during the Independence Day sale at my online dispensary, drhoffmanstore.com. Do you suffer with chronic pain? Are you taking risky over-the-counter or prescription anti-inflammatory drugs? Living with pain can cause depression, overeating, anxiety, loss of sleep, and low quality of life. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a better natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals. Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposome technology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. It contains powerful antioxidant properties and plant-based curcumin used to possibly reduce inflammation and block proteins that trigger swelling and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216. That's 888-841-7216. Or go to myfuturefarm.com. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Don't live with pain when there's an all-natural, science-based remedy that works without adverse side effects. Get free shipping on all of your orders at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking to Dr. David Hanscom. He's an orthopedic surgeon who's turned his attention to prevention because, well, as an orthopedic surgeon, one experiences a lot of failure. Failed back surgery, a very, very common dilemma for a lot of patients. Back surgery can sometimes be beneficial, but long-term, the results, can be iffy. And he has developed a website called backincontrol.com, but the lessons of his research are generalizable to our current pandemic crisis. We talked a little bit about Plan A, which is a document that he developed with a working group that talks about some of the measures people can undertake to fortify their resistance to the virus. Not that you can become invulnerable to the virus, but that if you acquire it, you're less likely to go down that slippery slide to cytokine storm. We talked about cytokines. In part two, I want to pick his brain about something called the polyvagal theory. What's that all about?
Well, Dr. Stephen Porges wrote a book in 2011 called The Polyvagal Theory, but he's been researching this for about 40 years, and the vagus nerve is one of the cranial nerves that goes to the internal organs, your heart, your lungs, the gut, the bladder, the bowel. That's all run by the vagus nerve, but it also goes to the immune system. And what his theory is that there's two parts of the vagus nerve. One part works above the diaphragm and one works below the diaphragm. The one below the diaphragm is the primitive system, that is the freeze phase of thing. But in mammals, particularly humans, that part of the vagus nerve interacts with facial muscles. It downregulates the sympathetic nervous system. Instead of being automatically defensive, by connecting with the facial muscles, language, etc., it actually allows us to have social interaction. So when you are threatened, you have a sympathetic response, which fires up what's called inflammatory cytokines. In other words, your immune system fires up as well as the rest of your body, and that's modulated through the vagus nerve. And so what happens is that if you think that a person is safe, then the parasympathetic nervous system, in other words, the vagus nerve, kicks into gear and dampens the sympathetic response so you can socially interact.
The parasympathetic response is sometimes referred to as the rest and digest response as opposed to the fight or flight. That's an oversimplification, of course, but it does kind of give the connotation of that you go into sort of a more relaxed state.
Correct. So it's fascinating because what happened is Dr. David Clausen in Seattle somehow his unusual grasp of medical knowledge clear back to medical school, that those of us that have worked with them are sort of embarrassed about what we have forgotten. And so his capacity to put together the cytokines, inflammation, the immune system has been remarkable. Then he came across the polyvagal theory, which he started to take his knowledge and put it in that context. Then he and Dr. Porges are on the same team. So then Dr. Porges did not know that much about cytokines. So the combination of their knowledge has just been explosive. I mean, I probably learned more in 8 weeks than I've learned in 30 years. It's been unbelievable. So it's been exciting. And we developed this document called Plan B, where we understand, if you understand which part of the fight, flight, freeze, or faint response that you're in, as you honor those phases, then you actually can prevent this cytokine storm and avoid mortality.
And by the way, those are resources that are available on your website?
The Plan B is not out to public knowledge yet. I'm really trying to figure out what to do with this. It's really geared towards medical professionals about what you do when somebody gets sick.
Okay.
So the Plan A is clearly available and what people can do. And of course, there's overlap with Plan B because when you come to the hospital and you're sick, you're still going to do the things that calm down the nervous system or upregulate the parasympathetic nervous system. So the essence of the solution is that you have the sympathetic response, the fight response. Your body's fired up appropriately to fight off the infection, and then it spirals out of control. So instead of throwing, I would use the word random medications at it, what you can do is engage the parasympathetic nervous system to calm down the response. In other words, you don't want to engage it too early because you need the sympathetic nervous system to actually fight off the virus.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, they use this one, it's called interleukin 6 inhibitor, which actually stop the cytokine storm.
Yeah, these are powerful drugs used sometimes for rheumatoid arthritis, for example, right?
Right. And then people died of bacterial infections.
Yeah. You don't want to suppress the immune system too much because, I mean, it's kind of a balance. You want a strong immune response, but you don't want an over-exuberant immune response. So you want something that's balanced.
Right. So there's a bunch of ways of actually recruiting the parasympathetic nervous system, which is going to be much more self-adjusting to the sympathetic nervous system because you only can push it so hard. So when you marshal the body's own defenses against the sympathetic response, then the odds of going into the cytokine storm drop down dramatically. But the first step, and what we're asking, this is an approach. We're not saying this is the end answer. So we think there are dozens of different protocols that can come on board based off the approach. But the approach honors the fight, flight, or faint response and understands that what's happening to the patient is going to be in that context. So the first step is to simply cover the bases. So for instance, you need vitamin B, C, D, vitamin K. You need zinc and magnesium because all of those are critical for enzyme function and for white blood cell function to work, right? So the idea is to make sure those bases are covered. But the problem that we're seeing is that people go into these major clinical trials and maybe they're covering those bases, but they're not documenting it. In other words, let's say you try this major interleukin 6 inhibitor, but you haven't actually covered the vitamin D, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So we're saying, look, cover your bases and document it for the starting point. Second of all, we talked about Plan A, things you can do to up your immune response, the sleep, the stress, et cetera. But then once
Plan A is more about lifestyle measures that are not so highly technical that people can implement on their own, right?
Right. But once you get sick, then you actually can do other things to actually stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system. For instance, there's certain musical tones, relaxing music, upregulates the parasympathetic nervous system. Touch is a big deal. And so what we're doing when you put on masks, put people in the ICU, and isolate them, is Dr. Porges puts it so clearly, you've now dysregulated the autonomic nervous system. So now the sympathetic nervous system, so the parasympathetic nervous system, which is based on social interaction, is now offline.
It's a scary and isolated and lonely place. And,
So we think in the ICU, having family members there, of course, under controlled conditions, and actually, and there's some remarkable case reports how this works. But there's one 12-year-old girl whose life was probably saved by her mother, a radiologist, being in the room and comforting her child.
Mm-hmm.
There's also direct vagal stimulators. You can put little.
Yes. I was going to ask about that. Literally, a VNS, vagal nerve stimulation, is very much a vogue, and it's actually an alternative for spinal pain, and they're implantable.
Right.
You can implant them. You've got a little button you can push to get your stimulation. Yeah.
But there's now two other choices, which, again, I have to admit, 3 months ago, I'd never heard of vagal stimulation. But there's three choices. One is the implantable.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, there's actually little acupuncture-type needles that you can put on the earlobe that actually directly stimulate the vagus nerve, which are very effective. Then the one that Dr. Porges has now developed is he's taken certain tones of music that stimulate the muscles of the middle ear to contract, which actually directly stimulate the vagus nerve.
Mm.
putting a cold washcloth on somebody's forehead stimulates the fifth nerve, which actually goes to the nucleus. Goes to nucleus close to the vagus. Mm-hmm. So there's musical tones, like a lullaby type music. There's the direct stimulation of the ears. Also other things that are anti-inflammatory that are intriguing to us. For instance, instead of using dextrose in the ICU, there's ketones. Viruses love sugar. They mm-hmm. hate ketones. Mm-hmm. So we're in the freeze phase. We're starting to lose the battle against the virus. Instead of cranking people from the freeze phase back into the fight phase, allow the body to regenerate and heal. So ketones are a very efficient energy source. They're strongly anti-inflammatory. And so we're saying don't use steroids, use ketones. Mm-hmm. Oxytocin, another hormone, which is very anti-inflammatory. We think of it as a love drug. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Sue Carter is Dr. Portis's wife. She's the number one expert in the world on oxytocin, which, mm-hmm. again, we never really thought about. Nicotine patches. So nicotine mm-hmm. is very cholinergic. It calms people down. Mm-hmm. So again, I'm not saying I know the dosage and the timing of it.
As opposed to smoking, the one component of cigarettes. And that's right. Why a lot of people say, well, I need to smoke a cigarette to relax.
Right. You know, works.
But it's not the tar and the smoke. It's that specific pharmaceutical that you're getting through the vehicle of a cigarette. You can also get it through a patch or through gum, lozenges, and so on.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So nicotine patch does not have any real downside to it. It's actually very cholinergic. In other words, it really stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system. So it's intriguing to us. Again, we're asking people to consider this as a protocol, but again, cover all the bases first. So is a nicotine patch working? Yes or no? But again, if you don't have vitamin D levels up, we don't really know, right? So we're saying standardize a protocol, then try these minimal risk interventions, minimal cost. Because remember, if we get these high-level drugs available, they're expensive. They're not widely available, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the key to this process is the solution is actually right in front of us. By taking what we actually know that's effective and combining them, marshaling the body's own defense mechanisms from the parasympathetic nervous system standpoint has a high chance of being very effective.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this vital message with you. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Biomega Fish Oil from Biotics Research. For over 40 years, Biotics Research has been providing the highest quality supplements, surpassing industry standards. Biomega Fish Oil contains therapeutic doses of vital omega-3s in the triglyceride form, which is highly bioavailable. Biotics Research ensures maximum purity and freshness by managing their fish oils from catch to capsule, verified by rigorous independent testing. For more information, go to drhoffman.com/biotics research. That's drhoffman.com/biotics research for Biomega Fish Oil. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Dr. David Hanscom. I think one of the things that our listeners would like to hear from you about is about the current state of spinal surgery. I think a lot of people are suffering from back pain. They are considering, or they've been advised to undertake spinal surgery. And that there's all these different monikers that are given to it, non-invasive, you know, less invasive, minimally invasive. As a former spinal surgeon, I guess once a spinal surgeon, always a spinal surgeon.
Right.
What's your take on that?
It's the reason why I quit practice. Probably 70% of spine surgery should not be performed. And the data says that there's risk factors, as you well know, of anxiety, depression, catastrophizing, situational stress, et cetera, that all of those portend poor surgical outcomes. So about 7 years ago, I started a process called prehab, rehab before surgery.
Yes, wonderful.
Where we dealt with all those issues. And what I now know that all those issues actually elevate the cytokines. So it ends up you have higher infection rate, have problems with wound healing, people have more pain afterwards. So by calming people down before the surgery, our results became spectacular. What actually happened is that people quit, they canceled their surgeries because mm-hmm. their pain disappeared. Mm. So by the end of my practice, I was only operating between 4% and 5% of my patients. I walked through the door. The only reason I was able to sustain a living as a surgeon was because I was to deal with infected spines from people addicted to heroin. Mm. And so that was not a very happy practice. I was happy to do my job, but I felt really badly. Mm-hmm. So I got to learn a lot about opioids and opioid addicts.
So you were talking yourself out of clients.
Yeah, I put myself out of business, essentially.
Okay.
But I didn't understand the inflammatory nature of pain, but it turns out we were doing spine surgery on anxiety, but probably 70% of spine surgery simply should not be done.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, you've written a book, Do You Really Need Spine Surgery? Take Control with a Spine Surgeon's Advice. And
right.
The book is generally available through the usual sources.
Correct. It's a very quick read. It simply talks about the state of your nervous system versus the anatomy. And so there's four quadrants that you can put yourself in. Once you understand your quadrant, then you honestly can take control of your care. I'm not against surgery. I'm a surgeon. Mm-hmm. If something needs surgery, I'm happy to do it. Of course, I'm still a surgeon at heart. I like to do surgery. But I really hated to do surgery on people that didn't need it, especially if they had a bad outcome. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel good about that at all. But the last 2 years of my practice, I was seeing 3 to 5 patients a week having surgeries done or recommended on basically normal spines. Mm-hmm. And then when they failed, the results were horrible. At the same time, I was watching hundreds and hundreds of patients going to pain-free. That was a self-directed process without any risk at all. Even the surgical patients that normally I would do surgery on were going pain-free. So it was hard for me to watch this difference of, I mean, when people are in chronic pain, it's miserable. They're trapped. They're frustrated. They lose hope. Watching patients without hope regain their hope, regain their life, and thrive was unbelievably rewarding. Mm-hmm. I talked to one gentleman this morning who ran across my book about 6 years ago, 5 years ago. He had had 20 years of chronic pain. He had 27 surgeries.
Oh my goodness.
High dose narcotics, alcoholism, major suicide attempt.
Yeah.
And he states right now he's never felt better since then. He was 30 years old. He's about 65 years old now.
Wow.
So he's just doing it. So watching that happen is incredibly rewarding. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it's wonderful. But, as a spinal surgeon, and I'm calling upon you, I guess, to be a bit of a whistleblower, do you think that the incentives align themselves to encourage unnecessary spinal surgery?
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. I mean, I don't necessarily fault the surgeons, even though I think we have some culpability here. But what's happened is that the business of medicine has kidnapped us. Remember we talked about in the first podcast of safety versus threat? The number one factor that helps people heal from chronic pain is the doctor-patient relationship. Mm-hmm. And since the business of medicine has limited our time with patients, they feel they're not really listened to anymore. They don't feel safe. So they are actually pushing us. And as you know, with medical records electronically being done now, they're monitoring us on our profit margin. But the profit margin is based on procedures that we know that have been documented to be ineffective.
So-called productivity markers. In other words, how much value are you to the hospital that you work for?
Correct. And so I was not one of the favorite people by any means. In fact, I was told by I heard through the grapevines, multiple administrators were very happy to see David Hanscom leave.
Right.
And I'm going, no, wait a second. So anyway, the bottom line is the hospital systems, I think right now the hospitals are probably the worst culprits in this game, and they're pushing the doctors hard. They were actually asking us my last year in practice to do this procedure called a sacroiliac joint fusion. And I've heard over 30 talks on it. It simply does not work, cannot work, won't work. But they asked us to do it because it had a good profit margin. So in medicine, but I'll talk about spine surgery specifically, in regular business, products are offered based on quality and price. In medicine, they're offered only if they're paid for. The quality doesn't really matter, right? So, yeah, it's very much profit-driven. And the problem is I actually hold medicine largely responsible for our epidemic right now, because we don't feel – if you can't feel safe with your doctor, where are you going to feel safe?
That's a rhetorical question, but – these days, not in the hospital.
No, not in the hospital. But I mean, the problem is that, again, the essence of healing chronic pain and also dealing with the COVID epidemic is that as you feel safe, you go from inflammatory markers down to anti-inflammatory, your body regenerates. But the last 10 years, particularly with the computerized medical records, we're on a production line. Doctors are burning out badly. They become production workers. And we're making major surgical decisions on the first visit. And even before I started chronic pain work, I still would never do surgery on somebody unless I had been their doctor for at least 3 months. I mean, I don't know you, you don't know me, but as you know, there's a strong trend in medicine to do surgery recommendations on the first visit. How can that be? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but you know, when you're a surgeon, you don't make a lot of money on office visits. If it was just about office visits, you could just be a psychiatrist, you know, and just talk to people. And, you know, the office visit for a surgeon is basically auditioning for a high ticket procedure.
Correct. Exactly. And that's not medicine, that's technology. I mean, we're going back to the 1700s where the barbers were the surgeons, okay? And that's, and unfortunately, we're sort of going back to that mode where we hold ourselves up as technicians, and they don't hold themselves up responsible to take care of these, quote, soft variables. Well, again, you're changing the body's whole entire immune system inflammatory response. So it's the surgeon's responsibility if they don't want to do it themselves. He or she is still responsible to getting that done before they make that final decision. So they're trying to abdicate their responsibility to everybody else but themselves, and that is not correct. We're physicians. We're not technicians.
Indeed. I noticed you talked a little bit about CBD in your protocols when I reviewed them. Do you think CBD can play a role for ameliorating pain and anxiety? And it also may have anti-inflammatory benefits.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of excited about CBD. I mean, I'm one of those people who really had a lot of anxiety about it originally. And so there's over 100 different molecules. We don't know which one is the best. Dr. Jim Taylor, a friend of mine that runs a pain clinic in North Carolina, has spent a lot of time actually studying the molecules. But it does work for sleep. It also helps with anxiety. It's got a very high tolerance margin. In other words, it's anti-inflammatory. And we also found out that opioids are actually inflammatory. It's actually a stress chemical. So actually, opioids are inflammatory. Oh. It's why we get this upregulation of the brain where people get hypersensitized to opioids. It's not just the tolerance, it actually inflames the brain. So I'm actually sort of excited about cannabinoids. It's probably going to be another 5 years before we really figure this out. But it appears that cannabinoids actually have a much higher chance of actually being effective in chronic pain than the opioids. By the way, psychedelics, again, are being talked about. I don't know anything about those.
Yeah.
So, but I think there's actually quite a bit of promise with those also.
Michael Pollan talks about them in his recent book, and there are other researchers who are looking at redeploying them, you know, not to get high. It's not, we're not talking Timothy Leary here. We're talking, you know, for targeted effects.
Right. So, and then, and I know you're very, I'm just curious, you look yourself as complementary medicine, which to me, that should be mainstream medicine. And so I'm curious from your perspective, you know my world pretty well. So when you, I'm just curious from your perspective, what life looks like on your side of the fence.
In terms of COVID-19?
That and just patient interaction and interface and just outlook.
Oh, you know, I made the decision to practice integrative medicine or complementary medicine very early in my career. I kind of dropped out of my fellowship program, you know, right after residency and went directly into the practice of integrative medicine. And I would never look back. And this is over 30 years ago, and I found it extremely gratifying and really the only way to practice medicine.
Because
I think you come to it via a different route, you know, after a very long and illustrious conventional career, you found that you were stymied in your efforts to get patients better, and so you turned to what I consider a complementary approach. I don't forgo techniques of surgery and high-tech medicine to get patients well, but usually as a last resort and not as a first resort. So, you know, I think we're on the same page. We just had different journeys. I did it early, and you took a little longer through your passage through conventional medicine.
See, my contention is that what you're doing is medicine. In other words, what mainstream medicine, as you know, I'll just be clear here, has an arrogance that what you're doing is so-called alternative or complementary. What they're doing has no data. There's no data, right? I mean, so that's what we could go on this topic for a long time, but the term integrative and complementary medicine, I don't think should exist because this is medicine. I think there's lots of terms to use for what we call mainstream medicine, but they're off base. They are simply wrong.
Well, I would certainly agree with you on that proposition. And so let's give out some of the resources that you've generously made available. First of all, your book is Do You Really Need Spine Surgery? Take Control with a Spine Surgeon's Advice. But with regard to COVID-19, you've got some very tangible recommendations on your website. Where can people find those?
So the book I wrote first is called Back in Control, A Surgeon's Roadmap Out of Chronic Pain. And it's not just about back pain. It's about any chronic pain in your body. There's over 30 symptoms that can be addressed with the process. But the action plan of the book is called backincontrol.com, backincontrol.com, one word. And then you'll see a place you can sign in for some free PDFs. And one of those is Thrive and Survive COVID-19. And it outlines the 10 different categories of things you can do to drop inflammatory markers to have a much higher chance of actually surviving the problem.
Okay. And, you know, and I looked at it and I said, great minds think alike, because I think COVID-19 is a real call to action for us to get our house in order from a health standpoint, because
right.
It's not going away. It's going to be around, circulating around for a long time. And
right.
Let's look for magic bullets. Let's look for vaccines. But it really behooves all of us to take this as a call to action to enact an emergency preventive medicine. That sounds like a oxymoron, but, you know, it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I do think we have to change the way we look at healthcare in general. And obviously, this is a huge wake-up call for all of us. But no, absolutely. See, if each person takes individual responsibility for their own health, it almost stops a pandemic. I mean, I realize that's speaking, you know, pie in the sky, but really, if each person took responsibility for their own health, this would almost be a non-issue.
Indeed. Well, it's really been a pleasure talking to you about this, and congratulations on taking this direction. I think it's a very constructive direction for you at this point in your career, you know, a person with your credibility to get the word out about these more innovative and lifestyle-oriented approaches. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That was Dr. David Hanscom. His website is backincontrol.com. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This July 4th weekend, stock up on your favorite supplements during the Independence Day sale at my online full-script supplement dispensary. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. July 3rd through 5th, get 10% off and free shipping on my entire inventory of top supplements at drhoffmanstore.com. We stock only the highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients and take myself. It's the safest and most convenient way to purchase my curated supplements. Buying through FullScript offers fast shipping, refill reminders via text or email. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA compliant. Authentic, prescription-only supplements, and world-class support. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for 10% off and free shipping from July 3rd through 5th. That's drhoffmanstore.com. drhoffmanstore.com.